November 6, 2011, Bellevue, Washington. Julia placed her children into the car, taking her sick son to the hospital. Along the way, Julia ran out of gas, deciding to leave 2-year-old Sky in the vehicle while she went for help. When she returned 90 minutes later, Sky had disappeared. And as police investigate, Julia's story begins to fall apart. Was Sky kidnapped? Or did Julia play a role in the disappearance of her son? Many believing the answer may be found in an episode of a popular television show which aired the night before, whose plotline was extremely similar to Sky's disappearance. This is Sky's story.
But what happened to Sky Metawalla on a chilly November day in Washington State is now a mystery that has investigators scratching their heads and has everyone else pointing fingers.
Our community wants justice if something really happened to Sky.
Sky Elijah Metawalla was born September 6, 2009 in Bellevue, Washington, to parents Julia Beryakova and Solomon Metawalla. The second child to the couple who already had a little girl, Miley, 2 years earlier. Julia and Solomon were together from quite a young age, and in my opinion, quite inappropriately. Julia immigrated from the Ukraine to the United States in 1994 at age 12 with her family. 3 years later, 15-year-old Julia met 21-year-old Solomon, and the two quickly entered into an intense relationship, marrying in March 2003 in a small informal ceremony in Solomon's mother's kitchen. The cracks started to show in the relationship in 2007 when Miley was born. It was also around this time the family started to struggle financially. Solomon owned a convenience store, and a rival store opened, causing him to lose most of his customer base. But this time of change also marks when Julia started exhibiting concerning behaviours, in particular compulsive cleaning. She would clean for hours on end. Nothing else mattered and everything else was neglected, including her newborn baby girl. Julia would fail to feed herself and baby Miley. Solomon was working overtime trying to support his family financially, and he would come home during his lunch break to take Miley somewhere to eat. And they would have to go out to eat, because Julia wouldn't allow food to be kept in the house. She was terrified of cross-contamination of the food. Doctors prescribed Julia medication for obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD as it's more commonly known. After this, things improved greatly. Everything went back to normal and they were a happy family. Things were going so well that Julia fell pregnant with Sky, and against the orders of her doctor, Julia stopped taking her medication. Julia's depression and OCD not only came back, but it was at an all-time low. After Sky was born, Julia started the cycle again of the vigorous cleaning and neglecting caring for her children. She would clean the same areas over and over again until she was satisfied, vacuuming frequently, and only doing so in perfect straight lines. The family received 3 noise complaints from the managing company of the complex due to Julia's late-night vacuuming. The third time, the family were issued with a $300 fine. Julia would sometimes clean for 10 hours straight, sometimes not going to bed until almost midnight. But even then, Julia would not let Solomon sleep in their bed, because it needed to be perfectly made at all times. Instead, Julia and Solomon would sleep on the floor. It all got too much for Solomon, and in March 2010, Julia was committed to a psychiatric hospital after she confessed to her husband that she had dreams of strangling their children. This would be the first of 3 times she would be committed. Despite of all of this, before leaving the second facility, clinical psychologist Dr. Stephen Scholl, he determined in his report that Julia was not a risk to Sky and Marley. Quote, "Although Ms. Beryakova is dealing with a severe form of OCD, I do not believe that this interferes with her ability to be a compassionate, effective parent to her children." Unquote. Shortly after this, on June 4, 2010, Solomon would file for divorce. This is when things become very messy. Julia lost it. She sent Solomon a slew of text messages threatening to commit suicide, quote, "Please, please, I'm begging you with my whole heart. Help me find a peaceful way to die. I cannot live another day and cause you, Marley and Skye any more suffering. I'm dead inside anyway and have been dead for a long time. You will not miss me at all. And Marley and Skye have the best daddy in the world, so I know they'll be okay." Unquote. This would mark Julia's third and final psychiatric admission after she admitted to police that she was suicidal. She was involuntarily committed at Overlake Hospital and then Knaves Behaviour Health Hospital in West Seattle. However, she would then tell hospital staff that she made these statements up to get Solomon's attention. At many times throughout the divorce proceedings, Julia and Solomon had orders of protection against each other. They both claimed the other had been physically and emotionally abusive towards the children. At one point, Julia made a very serious claim that Solomon sexually abused their daughter. Julia even offered to forego alimony and child support if Solomon agreed to sign over rights to the children and allow her to move the three of them to Arizona, but obviously Solomon refused. But because of the allegations of violence, Child Protective Services, or CPS as we'll refer to them in this story, CPS became involved and launched an investigation. And during this time, Solomon was not given any visitation to the children, Julia receiving full custody. Now, for what it's worth, these allegations of abuse would be deemed unfounded, but Solomon would have a fight on his hands just to see Miley and Skye. November 2nd, 2010. A court-ordered mediation determined that Julia would retain custody of the children, with Solomon receiving full visitation rights. And this mediation process is very intense, with a standard session lasting between 11 and 13 hours. Now, while both parents would agree to this arrangement, the following day, Julia called her lawyer and voided the agreement. Julia would state that she felt pressured into agreeing to the terms. What is highly concerning, and what would be later revealed in the missing person investigation, that during this mediation session, Julia had left 4-year-old Miley and 2-year-old Skye alone in the apartment. We are talking two basically babies by themselves for as long as 13 hours. And what would happen 3 days later, Skye would disappear forever. This week's episode is brought to you by Foom. Ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, I've been there too. But here is a breath of fresh air. Foom. It's not about giving up, it's about switching up. Foom takes your habits and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. It's time to look at your bad habits in a different way. Instead of a drastic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad from your habit? Foom is an innovative, award-winning flavoured air device that does just that. Instead of vapour, Foom uses flavoured air. Instead of electronics, Foom is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Foom uses delicious flavours. You get it. Instead of bad, Foom is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Foom comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for distressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. I really love all the flavours that come with Foom. There is a cranberry one that I'm obsessed with. There is an orange one that's really good too. They just taste like flavoured air. Now, I know that's the idea, but that is literally what it tastes like. Air that has an orange aftertaste. It's perfection. I'm also a believer that products that have some weight to them are better quality. I get that's old school thinking, but I believe it. And the Foom device is kind of heavy. You can feel the weight of it in your hand. It looks really cool. And my favourite thing about it, it's a fidget spinner for adults. So when I'm feeling anxious and I want to bite my nails or pick or do something very weird, I can just spin it around or click with the magnet. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfoom.com/stolen and getting the journey pack today. Foom is giving listeners to the show 10% off when they use my code STOLEN to help make starting the good habit that much easier. November 6, 2011. Skye woke up sick with a fever, and Julia decided he needed to go to Overlake Medical Center in the neighboring suburb of Bellevue, about a 12-minute drive from their home in Redmond. Julia borrowed her brother's silver 1998 two-door Acura Integra, and between 8 and 8:30 that morning, Julia placed the two kids in the car and set off on their way, leaving her wallet and cell phone at home. About 2 miles into the 7-mile drive, on the 2600 block of 112th Street, they ran out of gas. Julia would later tell police that Skye was sleeping in the back seat and she didn't want to wake him. In that moment, she decided to let him be, in the car unlocked, and take Miley to walk the 1.6 miles to a Chevron gas station, north of where the car was left. This walk would have taken about an hour. This is despite the car breaking down in a residential neighbourhood, where Julia could have knocked on anyone's door and asked to use a phone or to borrow gas. Julia did not have a gas can with her, nor did she buy one. She didn't even take her purse with her to buy any gas. Now, I understand the panic and confusion with a sick toddler and running out of gas and everything, but at least make sure you're able to get yourself out of the situation. Julia called a friend from the gas station, and instead of asking said friend to buy some gas and she'd pay them back, the friend simply drives her back to the car. By the time Julia returned to the car, more than an hour had passed and Skye was nowhere to be seen. By 9:50 a.m, Julia called 911 from her friend's phone to report her son missing. Police were quickly on the scene and searched a 20-mile radius around the car. Police dogs were involved, but there was no sign, no scent of Skye outside the car. Julia spoke to police and nothing she said made sense. As soon as the keys were put in the ignition, the car started. When the car was checked, there was no mechanical issues and it definitely was not out of gas, with still 2.2 gallons in the tank. Around 11 a.m, police went to Solomon's home to tell him that Skye was missing. Solomon hadn't seen the children in months. Actually, no one had seen Skye in about 2 months. That was when the neighbour saw the little boy playing outside the apartment. And when police dig deeper, it was discovered the neighbours hardly ever saw Julia or the children. That Julia would regularly go out and leave the children alone at the apartment. And this would have been over the course of around 8 months of the family living at the apartment complex. When the history of the family were further investigated, there were other warning signs. From 2009 to 2010, CPS visited the Metawala family home on at least 6 occasions. And then it was discovered that this wasn't the first time Skye had been left alone in a car. When he was just 6 months old, Julia and Solomon had left a sleeping Skye in the car whilst they shopped at a Target. The temperature that day was 27 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 3 degrees Celsius. The police were called and the couple were arrested on child endangerment. Now, Julia and Solomon would claim they only left him for a few minutes, but the store cameras showed that Skye was left alone for almost an hour. Ultimately, the charges were dropped with parenting classes ordered instead. Back to the search for Skye. Police searched the car and the search dogs found no trace of Skye outside of the vehicle. This we know. Police then went to Julia's home in Redmond and searched there and her computer. But when it came to questioning Julia with what actually happened that day, she flat out refused to cooperate, invoking her Fifth Amendment rights. She was also asked to take a polygraph and she refused to do that too. Julia's lawyer reasoned this because Julia was mentally unstable at the time and, as we know, these tests are notoriously unreliable and may point to guilt when there is none. Regardless, to this day, Julia has never cooperated and we're talking 12 years later now. The only time Julia has spoken to anyone about what's happened to Skye was 2 weeks after he went missing. Julia began emailing a reporter with ABC News. She stuck to her original story about leaving a sick Skye in the car while she went to get help. But she did not know what happened to Skye after this point, and she would not elaborate any further. But in these emails, she had some choice words about her ex-husband, calling him a, quote, sadistic Muslim Pakistani, unquote. This is despite him converting and becoming a Christian for her soon after their relationship started. Police did all they could to get Julia to help find her son. 2016, 5 years after Skye's disappearance. Bellevue Police Chief Steve Milet would even try a public plea to Julia, quote, "The employees of the Bellevue Police Department will not stop searching for Skye, but I cannot emphasise enough the role you play in successfully locating your little boy. As you may know, many people have been impacted by Skye's disappearance, and I know they would all welcome your active participation in this investigation," unquote. Solomon did agree to take a polygraph, and his results were inconclusive. Given the stress surrounding the situation, I would not read too much into that. Now, he did take a second polygraph, but the results of this test have never been disclosed to the public. Solomon continues to cooperate with authorities and has made repeated pleas to the public for information on his son's disappearance. He has been out there organising his own searches and meetups, handing out flyers to anyone who will take them. From the beginning, Solomon believed that Julia knew more than she was saying, which, as we know, she was saying absolutely nothing. And given Skye was in Julia's full-time custody at the time and there were suspicious circumstances surrounding him going missing, Miley was removed from her mother's care and placed into foster care. Solomon continued to fight for his daughter, and he was awarded full custody in December 2011. This poor child had been through it and was emotionally scarred from only interacting from her mentally unwell mother. A mother who would regularly say in front of her children she wanted to suicide. Something 4-year-old Miley would repeat, that she wanted to suicide too, which is so heartbreaking and damaging for this basically baby still. So, what happened to Skye? The theories out there on unsolved mysteries and true crime forums basically all tend to revolve around Julia being behind the disappearance of her son. That she lied about what happened that morning and that possibly Skye wasn't even in the car at all. And this isn't outside the realm of possibility, given no one outside of Julia, and I guess Miley, had seen Skye in the 2 weeks before he was reported missing. Police did interview Miley, but she was only 4 years old and heavily influenced by her mother. Julia could have very well coached her into saying Skye was in the car that morning and they were driving to the hospital. Or maybe Julia could have wrapped a doll to make it seem that Skye was in the car for Miley's benefit. So she would have been honest to police when she said Skye was in the car that morning, in her mind anyway. Although Julia has shown that she's willing to leave Skye alone in the car, which is incredibly irresponsible in itself. Especially when Skye was only 2 years old, and he was sick enough to need to go to the hospital. Plus it was cold outside, 35 degrees Fahrenheit or 1 degree Celsius. What if Skye had woken up? He would have been absolutely terrified. And add on to that, the car was left with the doors unlocked, basically inviting something bad to happen. And while Bellevue is considered a safe and affluent area, it's also home to many transients. It isn't outside the realms of possibility that Skye could have been abducted, or even Julia having arranged for that to happen in an under-the-table adoption situation. As I mentioned, Solomon believes that Julia was responsible for whatever happened to Skye, although maybe not deliberate. Given Julia's history and mental health issues surrounding food and not having it in the house and failure to feed the children, Solomon believes it is possible Skye died of malnutrition, and then Julia disposed of his body to protect herself. And given Julia's expertise at cleaning, it seems fitting that she'd be able to erase any physical evidence from the house of her son's passing. And a reason behind this being the prevailing theory here is because Julia was a massive Law & Order SVU fan. And I must admit, I am too. And researching this episode gave me a renewed love for the show, and I binged so many seasons over the Christmas break. But I digress. The night before Skye went missing, the SVU episode that aired showed a story that was eerily similar to the events surrounding Skye's disappearance. And in the spirit of researching this story, I tracked the episode down and I watched it. For those following along, the episode is called Missing Pieces, Season 13, Episode 5. And spoiler alert, but the episode is about a young couple who claimed their son was abducted when their parked car was stolen on Halloween. However, it turned out they actually buried their baby, thinking the other may have killed him, and then concocted the car theft story as a cover-up. The story ends with neither of them being responsible at all, that the baby died of SIDS, and they walk away without any charges. Now, I could get into how ridiculously inaccurate that all is, but I won't because we'll be here all night. The thing is, though, there are similarities here with what allegedly happened to Skye. Personally, I think it is a coincidence, but I would be interested to know what you all think. Another less popular theory that Solomon did mention early on after Skye went missing, that perhaps Skye was taken to the Ukraine with Julia's estranged father. Now, he did come to visit in the spring of 2011, so around the time Skye went missing. And Julia arranged this so Solomon wouldn't get custody because maybe she saw this was a chance of happening. But all of that seems unlikely to me, given only Skye went missing and Miley was left behind. If this theory was what likely happened, to me, I would think both children would have went missing and not just Skye. March 2012. Solomon and Julia's divorce was finalised, and Julia reacted by creating a profile on seekingarrangements.com, searching for a sugar daddy who would support her with $3,000 to $5,000 a month in return for a romantic relationship. It's not clear if she found her bank, however. December 2014. Julia remarried to a man named Alan Morgan. And Alan has a lengthy criminal history, including several CPS referrals in Florida for cruelty towards a child he had with another woman. Also charges of violence against police officers, domestic violence, assault, chemical dependency, battery and assault. Alan was also an alcoholic and a heavy methamphetamine user, and periodically homeless, so obviously a real catch. Julia and Alan had a baby boy together, born in July 2015. A boy they named Elijah in memory of his missing older brother. Alan wasn't present for the birth of his son. He was in jail when Elijah was born, on domestic violence charges against Julia that occurred not long before Elijah's birth. The state issued a non-contact order between the couple, which of course they both violated. After Elijah was born, Julia told investigators that her and Alan did not live together, despite using the same address. Julia also claimed not knowing who the baby's father was, even though Alan was named on the birth certificate as his father, and Elijah and Alan both having the same middle name. At 4 months old, Elijah was removed from Julia's custody because he was deemed at risk. February 24, 2020, Julia filed a motion to appeal losing custody of Elijah, but this motion was denied. He is now living with Julia's mother. From all accounts I have read in my research, Skye's sister Miley is doing well. Solomon describes her as smart, adventurous and engaged. Although the fear and emotional trauma inflicted on Miley by her mother will be with her for her entire life. But she does appear to be doing really well now. There are negative comments about Solomon out there, but from my research in this story and looking at the bigger picture, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. He believes he's really doing his best with Miley, that he has made mistakes, but then again, what parent hasn't? In 2014, Solomon told the Seattle Times that Miley does not have any memory of what happened to Skye. Solomon is still holding on to hope that Skye is alive and out there somewhere, that one day he will see his son again. As of November 2019, police have spent 14,000 man hours and $2 million into the missing person investigation, looking into more than 2,500 tips, but to this day, what happened to this sweet two-year-old remains unknown. A question I do see on blogs and forums about this story is why wasn't Julia charged with child endangerment? Investigators will state this was a strategic move, because they would have to prove Skye was left alone in the vehicle. And although Julia admitted this openly, ultimately it would come down to someone coming forward having witnessed the car parked on the side of the road with Skye alone inside. But where this strategy comes into play, if police charge Julia with child endangerment and then Skye's body is later found with evidence Julia had murdered him, it would be extremely difficult to then turn around and charge her with murder. Double jeopardy and everything. This alone shows how sure police are that Julia may be responsible for what happened to Skye, or at least knows where his remains are. They don't want to risk any chance of Skye receiving justice for his death. But what I don't understand is how Julia had full custody and why there wasn't more CPS involvement here. So many red flags. Julia's multiple stays in psychiatric hospitals. Skye being left alone in the car at 2 months old. Granted, both parents were guilty of this. The neighbours practically never seeing the children and knowing they were being left alone in the apartment. We see this time and time again, week after week, story after story. But CPS should be, no, they need to be, more proactive in protecting children. If this had have happened, and Julia's doctors had made better recommendations about her fitness to care for her children, I don't know. Maybe Skye would have been still here today. Tragically, I doubt we will ever know what happened to little Skye, unless Julia has a change of heart and decides to come forward. At the time of his disappearance, Skye Metuwala was 2 years old. He was 2'10" and 28 pounds with black hair and brown eyes. Skye is biracial, Asian and Caucasian. He was last seen wearing a grey hooded sweatshirt, aqua and black striped Carter sweatpants, and white socks. If Skye is still alive today, he would be 14 years old. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Skye Metuwala, please contact the Bellevue Police Department on 425 577 5656. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice. And subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.